Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hello, it's Nerdist Podcast number 329. I think I said the last one was 329, but I was lying. It was 328. Although it wasn't intentional, so it wasn't really a lie. It was a mistake. I guess a mistake is an unintentional lie. Well, I'm glad we figured that out. Come see us live. We're doing Nerdist Podcasts on the road, as well as stand-up on the road. March 15th, we'll be in Grand Rapids, Michigan, doing Nerdist Podcasts live for Gilda's Laugh Fest. Then March 29th in Anaheim during WonderCon. And then a bunch of stand-up dates coming up solo for me as well. So go to nerdist.com/calendar to get information on all of those things. Today's podcast is brought to you by Tomb Raider. It's the new, all-new, rebooted Tomb Raider, available in stores now. Stores like Target, for instance. You could go just pick up Tomb Raider now if they have them available. They're not all sold out, so you better get over there quickly. It's on Xbox, Crystal Dynamics, Square Enix. This is, like I said, it's a reboot. Lara. Yeah, I know, I said Lara now. I have a tendency to want to say Lara Croft, but I know it's Lara. But then in the British accent, it almost becomes Lara, but it's Lara. This is, Ed Skydart, by the way, cosplayed as her for Comic-Con last year, which was phenomenal. So, it's a ton of gameplay. There's a survival, stealth, melee, range combat, exploration. It's just sort of a pared down, less glitzy version of Tomb Raider, and super cool. And if you get a chance, you should really watch Conan and Aaron Blair play on Clueless Gamer. It'll give you an idea of the gameplay. And then, of course, Conan always cracks me up. So that's it. Tomb Raider in stores. Pick it up. So grateful for them for being a sponsor. I like having a cool video game as a sponsor for the Nerdist Podcast. Kind of makes me happy. It makes me happy that we're doing that kind of stuff now. Skydart's nodding. She's nodding and thumbs upping me. Is that in a leave me alone kind of a way because you're busy doing work?
I'm looking at eyeshadows.
Whoa. Your eyes make shadows?
When I don't get enough sleep, they do. Finish damn intro.
I will finish the damn intro, because it's DC Pearson, who is our dear comedy friend DC Pearson from Derek Comedy, who also has a book out also today. Also. It's called Crap Kingdom, and DC is hilariously funny. And, well, instead of just telling you that he's hilariously funny, I'm just going to shut up and play the podcast so that you can experience it firsthand. The Nerdist Podcast, number 329, for reals, with DC Pearson. DC!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
So we've just started the podcast. Seconds ago, when I was loading up the disc, DC Pearson had made a mistake that we all make sometimes, a lot of times, which is that he read an internet comment. Now, I know we talk about it a lot on the show, but it's a real problem.
Yeah.
And so I want to help.
Well, it's something that I don't normally do, and I feel like there's nothing worse than you. There's something that you don't do, and then you do it, and then you're like, "That's why I don't do that."
I call that the Laugh Factory.
It's just there seems to be this this attitude from internet commenters that like this one comment that I happened to read and it will be recovering from for the rest of the week had and sort of typifies, which is like, don't try to tell me about stuff that I don't know about. If I wanted to know about something, I would already know about it.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like the sort of attitude of like, hey, not aware of this. Don't try to make me aware of it. That's not why I read.
Get out of my brain.
Internet sites. I read internet sites to know about things I already know about. Sorry. which is a little bit frustrating, especially when you're trying to promote something as I am. You're like, I'm trying to promote it because I want people to know about it because they might like it. And then when they go, no, sorry, haven't heard of this. And that's why it's bad.
Get out. Get out of my brain. Kyle, scoot over to the mic, but don't talk too much so people don't think I'm trying to replace Matt and Jonah with you.
Deal.
Matt and Jonah are in England right now, or they're at least they're on their way to England for the Nerdist TV show. So I apologize if they're not here, but they've been gone all week. That's something that they would say over
there. Yeah, I know.
That's the kind of information we should have armed them with before sending them over there.
They're going to be lost without that kind of thing.
Where were you?
A flashlight is a torch.
Quick, tweet it at them.
Okay, no, does Twitter work over there?
That? No.
Is it going to go across the DMZ that separates us from England?
I know that the Queen had a cable dragged across the ocean floor to communicate between the two land masses.
That was nice of her.
I don't know if that's
was that
still
on the rest of season three of Downton Abbey, because I didn't watch it past halfway through the season premiere.
Yes,
so
they start. They do a lot of telegraph porn.
Like, ooh,
yeah.
Is it like an early version of ASCII porn?
It's an early version of ASCII porn, and they're like weird vaginal emoticons, I guess, telegraphicons that you can make.
Vagicons.
Short, long, long,
short, long,
short,
long, short,
long, long.
Oh, see, I'm getting
long.
I'm getting long, 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 short already. Just hearing you talk about that. You know.
Is that a short, long, long in your long, long, short, short, long, long, long?
Or telegraphicons, long, short, Kyle. Short. I smell a bit. Write it down.
Three shorts, no dice.
Telegraphicons. That's the classic. That's the classic comedy formula of, I mean, we have emoticons now. In the old days,
they must have had.
Did Marconi say?
People love Marconi.
Love Marconi
material.
Jokes.
Yeah, exactly. That was my only problem when I saw that movie, The Original Kings of Comedy. I was like, these comics all have a Marconi bit. Steve Harvey had one. Cedric the Entertainer had one.
So wait, say that again. What did you say? Your mic cut out for a second.
Oh, no problem. I was just saying that when I watched The Original Kings of Comedy, that was my biggest problem. I was like, so many Marconi bits. We get it, guys.
Tons.
It's played out. It's over. Yeah. I mean, I get why everybody does
it. But when I was watching
so
Def Marconi Jam, it was like the jokes were so telegraphed in.
God. Telegraphed, delightful. Thank you.
Point out, like, the thought process of Chris Hardwick, by the way, though. Yesterday we were having something, and then I was telling him, you got to do that bit where you reference the movie Shine. And he's like, no one will know that, but he's now done 5 minutes of Marconi material.
Can I say something, though, Kyle? The difference is that there's at least a chance that people, that Marconi would be somewhere stuck in the back of their head from
America
something.
You give America a lot of credit.
Shine is, for some reason, in my head, conflated with the movie My Left Foot. So I'm just imagining Jeffrey Rush playing the piano with his feet. Is that what that's about?
I think so.
Okay.
I think that's exactly
great.
What it was. It was Jeffrey Rush. No, I think you're thinking of the, you're thinking of Daniel J. Lewis in the Western where he just uses his feet.
That was a Western?
Oh,
there will be blood.
There will be feet.
There will be feet.
There will be toes. I just want to warn you.
Yeah.
This is a pretty standard Western town, but there will be feet. We don't have a lot of shoes, and the one guy just uses his feet for everything.
This town's a size 10.
And everybody's
there ain't room enough for all these toes in it.
Well, it done got a point.
It's, well, but in the UK, it's 12. I don't get what the conversion is.
I'm your huckleberry. Sorry, I always just like to throw Tombstone in there whenever I can.
You have to.
God, it so still holds up. I enjoy Tombstone. I mean, it's a little melodramatic at points, but it's a fun movie.
I do an improv show at UCB, and we were interviewing a kid last night from the audience, and he at one point remarked that he had had a girlfriend in high school, and she would always bring him like black and white movies on VHS, and he was pissed because as far as he was concerned, there was no good movies before the 90s. Was his contention.
How old was this person?
According to him, 23, but he said that he was 23 enough times that I think he might be older. Do you know what I mean?
Still no
excuse. He's like, 23.
But how much older could he really be and think that any movie made before the 90s wasn't any good?
I don't know. You can be any age and still think that Chairman of the Board is the best movie ever.
I don't... Oh, Carrot Top's breakout role.
Carrot Top's breakout role. I've never seen it. Does he use a lot of props in the movie? Do they, like, write in opportunities for him to do prop comedy? Or is he just trying to...
I just remember this from the trailer, which was, this is a boardroom. Y'all look pretty bored to me.
That's good. Well, that right there is like, that's what you want to see. They probably said that in the pitch. When you're pitching the movie Chairman of the Board, you're going to want to have a board, B-O-R-E-D joke.
I'm going to say something, and that is, I like Carrot Top, and I think he's a delightful person, and I would actually love to have him on the podcast at some point. I think he's a super sweet guy, and the poor guy, I know he does prop comedy, and he's super silly, and he's not afraid to be silly, but I don't think he deserves the avalanche of hatred that came at him, you know.
But I think he's the wacky kid who everyone hates in the high school of stand-up.
But I don't know why.
I mean, well, there's a lot of ire directed at Carrot Top that I think we can all agree should really be pointed at Gallagher.
Oh, yeah.
Because Carrot Top isn't openly racist the way that Gallagher is.
Where do you fall on the whole Carrot Top-Gallagher
dispute? That's kind of like the Israel and Palestine of prop comedy.
Can't they just...
It will never be solved.
Will they figure out whose land has the props?
I hear they're going to have a two-prop solution.
I think that... Can't they just share the props?
You park on a driveway, drive on a parkway, and push Carrot Top into the sea.
Now,
that's for people to enjoy both props comedy.
What I'm waiting for are the comment threads about someone attacking what we just said as though we really actually were talking about.
Right. People are like analyzing it. Like, okay, I get it. Carrot Top's Israel. Gallagher's Palestine.
How could you even think for a second?
Right. Exactly.
You dumb piece of shit.
Watch this YouTube documentary. It's 55 minutes long. It explains everything, breaks it all down.
There's a college kid somewhere listening to this while working on an Israel-Palestine paper, and this is being cited as we speak.
Well, yeah, you know, the...
primary source.
The Keratopians and the Galagies are just so... No, Galagy doesn't really work.
The Sea of Galagy.
No, that's just someone who just... That's someone who worships the game Galaga.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's their altar.
Oh, man, I had a Galaga pun that I wanted to put on Twitter the other day, and I've since forgotten what it was.
They basically put a kneeling cushion so they can play Galaga while kneeling, and...
That makes you part of the Galagarchy.
Oh, well done.
Thank you. We always pray towards where the aliens are coming from, like, which is upward, you know. Yeah, exactly. So wherever I am, upward is, wow. So who won't we offend?
Listen,
what
we've
prisoners
already,
will be taken?
We've already
today?
Taken None. Down Carrot Top, Gallagher, and Galaga players. So I feel like all bets are off at this point.
If Galaga players can figure out how to attach a joystick to their computer, they will be writing us some very angry comments.
Well, you know, all you need to do is go to Think Geek and get that little iPad stand that's shaped like an arcade cabinet.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
I know.
Is there a way to then attach a like vinyl record player? And like an 8-track and just anything to build out more arcane technology.
Yeah, I think so. That'd be a real
There's an Adam's Family pinball on the other side
sure.
of it.
Sure.
That would
spooky bonus. I'm imagining it says spooky bonus at a point.
They're creepy and they're kooky.
But that's kooky not as bonus.
Good. Kooky bonus isn't as good.
No,
though. That's
kooky
not what
bonus is less than.
But I think it was Adam's Family Values that allowed us to believe that they do what they want to do, say what they want to say.
No, that's in the first movie.
Really?
That is.
Are you sure they live how they want to live?
Those are two of my favorite movies. I know which one.
Do they play how they want to play?
They do. They act like they want to.
See, you can never have the hit single for the sequel. You know what I mean? Like Men in Black had.
I beg to differ. Ninja Turtles 2.
What, Ninja Rap?
Ninja Rap, right, way bigger enough. Song than Partners in Crime.
I'm gone. Hey, guys, can I just throw this at you? Well, I guess we're gonna have to segment pro.
I think what we've learned here is we all think the lyrics to that song are a little different. Everyone has their own interpretation.
I think what we've actually all learned is that we remember that song. A lot.
I don't. We'll never forget that song.
What are you talking about?
With the spirit, some people fear it. Some people.
Is that the rap?
That's the breakdown part. Okay. Or it's the song that plays after that in the credits.
Man, I miss that. in like R&B or like New Jack Swing songs, where they would always have like, they would have like a boy band like New Edition, and one guy would like just start rapping in the middle, and he always be like, "My name is Mikey, and here we go. Rap is a new thing. Get used to it. Now it'll be here forever."
I feel like a lot of those earlier rhymes are actually rhymed. A lot of those earlier raps actually rhymed.
Mm-hmm.
But
as opposed to mine?
Yeah, which was really just prose.
Well, that guy was ahead of his time.
Yours was just metered prose.
Well, that guy was he was doing free verse hip hop, which it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to rhyme. There's no verse structure.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you think I was doing rap? I was doing a tribute to Ovid. So I think mine was actually a little more academic than your basic rhyme
Ovid
scheme.
Ovid was more into like neoclassical hip hop.
We you guys were like Ovid references?
Free verse.
I remember having my brain melted in college because I was taking a classics course, and we were reading, I think maybe Aristophanes, and we were reading a play where the husband is having an affair, and the slave is trying to help the husband to keep it from the wife, but the slave really is the sort of the master of the household, and he, I think the guy, this is really getting exciting.
It was basically a telenovela.
It was kind of a telenovela. So he bought, so I guess he had, there was a dress that his mistress had that he was going to give to his wife. And the slave had the line, something like, "The nose recoils from smells quite unwashable."
Ooh.
Like there was a vagina reference in the, and I don't know why. I mean, listen.
There's
in the
a lot of pussy in the classics.
Well, I feel like until you're like 18 years old, I think until you're 18 years old, you think that vaginas were invented in like 1950.
Exactly.
Chrysler vagina.
And then going back to your early thing, pussing on the hits was the joke that I want to make there. but that idea of like, I don't know why that melted my brain so much.
Yeah. Well, they had all that stuff. They had gay people. They had women.
What?
I know. It was crazy. It was wild.
Black people were talking, not just singing.
It was crazy.
But you'd really do grow up kind of thinking that like, okay, like sex was invented in like 1962. It was like around the same time as the Beatles.
I think when you figure out that like sex happened in the 70s and not just when you were younger.
Sex definitely happened in the 70s.
Your brain keeps exploring. Then too?
Have you ever gone down a vintage porn rabbit hole?
Absolutely. God, yes. Of course I have.
Because you just
it's so
see.
Much artsier than my normal pre-nap masturbation session.
Like the earlier stag film music is so like Felicity Flaps and Big Dirk Magoon.
Well, because they also seem a lot more illicit because you feel like they were taking place in the back of some like shack or something like that where there was like a drug. It was a lot more drugged runaways.
Also,
if you're into that kind of thing.
Also, the women in those always just lie there and take it. it's so sad.
Supporting your theory.
Right.
But then also the idea that I mean, at first you think, oh, this is going to be really interesting and a look into the past. But because everyone just looks like grandparents or like Chicago Capone mugshots, it really takes you out of.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you like to think that everybody looked the same all throughout time. But they're like, I don't know if you ever seen, like the documentary Crumb. There's a point where him and his son are drawing like women out of like a 1920s like reform school yearbook, basically. And they're talking about how a lot of them have these faces that like you really don't see anymore. And I feel like when you're looking at like old porn, it's just like, yeah, these are people from the past.
Everyone looks
people.
Like they're made out of gravel and with broken noses.
Man, you're taking my dick, see?
Well, because you used to have to bare knuckle box to even make it to the age of 10. Everyone was like, you know, everyone was a contender at that point. Women, men, children, everyone had to get
times.
In the ring and fight a horse.
Yeah, way harder times.
In the rules for stickball that kids would play, you had to get in a bare knuckle boxing fight at each base.
Oh yeah, for sure. It was like Calvin Ball, but with a lot more like brutality.
Oh yeah, just bloody
like,
faces everywhere.
It was like Calvin Ball meets Gladiator.
There we go.
I wonder what the reason was for the sort of softening of features throughout the generations. Was it because our lives got cushier?
I think that's part of it. I think also too more. I was about to say race mixing, which makes me sound like a KKK representative. But yeah, no, I just think that like people from different nationalities, like,
representative,
get representative. Hi, I'm representing the KKK. I have here a press release about miscegenation,
about mixing races.
Yeah, exactly. So we're pitching segregation. We're rebranding segregation. It's going to be called
Do you mind
Seg.
Put
we're
really these calipers Seg. On your head, real quick, just we're to really, make sure you get what I'm saying.
We're doing this whole social media push. We're trying to get that 18 to 49 demo.
Hashtag SEP but eek. You know, so if you could just tweet that, we'd really appreciate it.
If you go to sepbuteek.org, we have a Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's just a lot of crap. We're going to change lynching to be calling crowdsourcing. We're going to call it lynching crowdsourcing.
Oh my God!
The original crowdsourcing.
Oh my
and,
God!
So that's fun.
We're doing That'll an AMA about racial purity.
Ask me anything.
Hi, my name is George Wallace. Ask me anything.
So that's fun. That's more things for people.
We have a separate thread for frequently asked questions. The answer to all of them are get out of town.
So how do you feel about the emerging nature?
Get.
What do you think of it? Get.
That's what I'm. That's always the what I'm worried about. That kind of reaction whenever I leave sort of a major metropolitan area. Like, I'm worried that one of those guys, like a sheriff, is just going to be like, "You boys ain't from around here, are you?"
I had someone, a police,
really?
Say that to me in Tennessee.
You ain't from around here.
It made
are you?
My day. I was going to Bonnaroo, and it was me and my brother,
sure.
Who looks kind of like you.
Okay,
and we're in a gas station, and the woman cop who comes up, she's like, "You boys going to that Bonnaroo?" And we're like, "How'd you know?" Like, "Cause you boys ain't from around here." And my brother and I high five, and she's like, "Yes."
I like that she called it that Bonnaroo, and then like they have several different Bonnaroos.
Did a refined Southern judge come out and say, "What is a Ute?"
And then they told us to get.
Get. Now, when in my day, Mumford and Sons
was just a
Model T wheel fixing shop.
Be fair, the people of Murfreesboro, Tennessee are delightful.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it was not your fault, but mine.
Like, he just speaks the...
It was your heart on the line. I really fucked it up this time.
My daddy
didn't.
My daddy was a lumineer. He worked in a light bulb factory and held a lot of phosphorus dust. But y'all enjoy the music. Y'all enjoy. Y'all enjoy. I don't know where that accent is from, but I immediately started sweating profusely when I did it. I had to pat my brow with a handkerchief.
I'm a Novemberist. I'm a hipster. Hipster rednecks.
You can't.
Before it was cool.
The Strokes was something we got across our backside when we failed to tar the shed frequently enough.
Good night, everybody. Like, this is basically just us performing in Deadwood. Like, so we opened, we started an open mic at the Belly Union. And that's where
we just grabbed the white.
The joke needs a fucking tag, EB. The joke needs a fucking tag.
Well, it's nice to see you cocksuckers come in here and do a great bringer show. Yeah, have the gimp come around and clean up all the teeth on the floor, you
Swearing
fucking cocksuckers.
Would run a goddamn bringer show.
Now, I was wondering when you bring me up, Al, if you could remind people that I was on Comics Unleashed with Byron Allen.
Well, howdy fucking duty for you.
It's just been a series of Venn diagrams.
Wait a minute. I just need to go back and put some focus on your bit of comic telling Al Swearin just to mention that he was on Byron Allen. Oh my God. That's beautiful. That is simply beautiful, my friend. Are you?
I just like imagining if Al Swearingen was the host of WTF.
He kind of is.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. Where's my snooze?
You are obviously here to promote Nerd Turns.
Yeah.
What?
The episode of Nerd Turns that
you
he was on. Which,
I was in the,
That's
the,
right.
Yeah.
You were the
which
first
has recently been renewed.
Yeah. Season 2 is in the works.
They're
Thanks,
exciting.
Boss.
Mm.
My pleasure. You kids are great. I don't get it, but I know some people
I think
do.
You're the person we most pitch trying to get back on the show.
Oh, yeah?
Because you like were the first person to come on as a guest besides Chris Hardwick to like legitimize our show. Mm-hmm. And
thanks
I remember
throwing me the side.
Thank you. But I just remember we wrote for like 4 hours trying to like write good dialogue.
I like the idea that my presence would legitimize anything.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
And Chris is a mogul. He's wearing a suit. He comes in, he leaves, he legitimizes the whole thing.
I'm wearing a suit right now. Because I shot something earlier and I had a suit on, and
isn't it great to then let the suit carry over on into the rest of your day? It's one of the best things about having an early funeral.
It really is. But I'm already dressed for the funeral.
Great. Yeah, exactly. And now in my mind, I'm like, Chris Hardwick always wears a suit.
Yeah,
always. You know what
I mean? Yeah, that's something I carry.
Normally he wears a big suit, like Talking Head style, though.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You may find yourself living in a... It was funny. Actually, I did Thrilling Adventure the other night. And it was the 8th anniversary show, and Paul F. was in a gorgeous tuxedo with, like, these really cool, studded buttons up the front. And someone was like, Paul, the studded buttons, how do you do it every time? And Paul was like, I have really painted myself into a corner. Because he is the suit, like, Paul wears amazing suits.
So he's in a male fashion arms race with himself.
He kind of is, because he has to keep a certain level every time, and... I'm sure that if he even wears a slightly casual suit, people are like, what happened? You know, like he's really got to up the bar every time.
Where is he? When looks in his closet and just goes like, how did I let this happen?
And that's an expensive, that's got to, because he wears very awesome,
really
nice
stuff,
original pieces that you don't see often. Mm-hmm. So that has got to be a bitch to keep
up. I mean,
up.
I guess that the thought is that if you buy one thing that's really nice, it lasts as long as, say, 29 shirts from H&M. But by the same token, I feel like at a certain point, you're right. It has to just completely then go, like, you are going
to
be spending more money.
Like, you can't just be the one suit guy.
You can't be the one suit guy, because then it seems like you're in the pursuit of happiness. I mean, we're on different wavelengths, I guess, fashion-wise. I think when I get, like, one new shirt every year and a half, people are like, whoa, look at you. New shirt from the Goodwill. Because I think that, you know, like a lot of people, you get, like, four great shirts, and what, are you going to get a fifth? No. that's not loyalty. It's not the type of loyalty
I
like to exhibit.
V-necks and thought no one would notice, and people immediately are like, oh, you changed your outfit, huh? Changed the whole world.
Yeah, no, V-necks are, that's a choice.
How many, Kyle, do you think people, because I see you in a lot of plaid shirts, do people just think you wear the same plaid shirt over and over again?
They wouldn't be entirely wrong. The idea is, like, as a really tall dude, like, the plaid Western shirt fits. And so once you figure it out, you're like, well, let me just buy all of them then.
Sure.
I remember I wore one, like, plaid shirt one time, like, 5 years ago. And
Jonah,
a girl on
nervous.
An improv team that I was at, that I was on at the time, was like... She just looked at it and went, guys always look good in those. And I was like, well, this is all I'll be wearing.
That's all I need.
Yeah.
Just based on a whim that she had.
Precisely. She could have said anything. She could have been like, guys always look good in like ponchos. And then I just would have been strictly ponchos.
That was a great movie.
Strictly Ponchos.
It was the Latino version of Strictly Ballroom. That was a weird reference. Who's going to catch that?
But, the Lerman heads out there?
Anyone? The Lerman heads!
I didn't even realize it was a pun on lemon heads. That's a whole other layer to it.
That was a genius layer. Oh, the Lerman heads. The
Mulan
people who love
Dando,
Boss Lerman.
Mulan Dando and the Lerman heads.
Oh, my God.
That's how you become a professional.
How long are you going to be professional?
When you can rattle off the Lerman
pun
heads.
Pun maker that people get angry at on
But
Twitter.
you're bi in the sense that you do stand-up and improv.
If that's what bi means, then yes.
I mean, but not everyone can do both successfully.
I think there's getting to be, you know, sort of like trumped up comedy beefs, not in the press, notwithstanding. I think there is getting to be a lot more crossover between those two worlds, certainly more than when I started. Like, I started doing Upright Citizens Brigade in New York in like 2003. And at that time, even though the UCB had gotten pretty big, even by that point, there was still the stand-up world seemed like a whole other universe.
Well,
like,
if setbuddeek.org has anything to say about it, I want segregation across all improv in one place, stand-up in another place, people who like wheat
bread. Separate pantomime drinking fountains in your improv show.
It's a world where everyone... I call it niche culture. Everyone has a very specific...
Sorry. That guy, he's really trying to, like, micro-segregation. Just everywhere.
Artisan segregation.
Artisanal segregation. That's the part that gets left behind in the slow food movement. Michael Pollan, get on it.
Where did you start?
I'm from Arizona originally. And
which
I moved
part?
To Phoenix.
Oh, I've been to Phoenix many times.
Yeah, it's a place. No, I do like it. I mean, it has like a kind of a cool little like downtown art scene and stuff. Now it's getting pretty cool. Yeah, great bands for sure. Have come out of Arizona. The Gin Blossoms.
Andrew Jackson Jihad.
Till I hear it from you.
I always consider myself a huge Gin Blossoms fan. Never heard that song until 2 weeks
what?
Ago.
What? I think it was what? On the Empire Records
I know,
soundtrack.
But I never got into Empire Records. That was a big like oversight in my teenage nerddom.
Yeah. But you look like you could have been in Empire Records.
I know, but I was living it. I didn't need to watch it.
Yeah.
Did you get eaten by
Empire
Guar?
Records, I live that shit. I'm on the roof having a concert.
He's really mad about Empire Records still after all these years.
Let it go.
No, you let it go. Yeah, I did.
Damn that man.
Man, some of us are still fighting Airheads. That movie didn't end for me. I'm still in that radio station in my mind.
Okay, wait.
With Ernie Hudson still. Yes.
Are you the same guy that runs Sepparique.org?
What? Are you saying I only have one accent? that trends more and less into Prospector as I do a little bit more of a list?
Hi, I'm from Texas. Hello, I'm from Phoenix. Hello, greetings from
Portland. We don't even have an accent. That's the one flaw, not really a flaw, it's part of its charm, actually, but in the movie Raising Arizona, they make us have Western accents, which we don't.
Well, they made, I think that may have just been a... No, I guess that's true. Yeah, everyone did have an accent in Arizona.
Oh, and it's
or it my name it, ain't Nathan Arizona.
It makes it better. I'm glad that is so, rather than just the non-accent that we actually have in Arizona, because everyone from Arizona is pretty much from somewhere else.
Well, that is a pretty much a perfect movie. So I guess
it is.
Everyone should now.
They got
have
Yodas and shit on.
Yodas and shit.
Watched my girlfriend. I just watched.
Would you buy furniture from a place called Unpainted Huff Hands? I fucking love that guy. That guy's dead too.
I know. And like pretty soon after he filmed that, I think, right?
I think he died in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say. I don't know.
Right.
He's not been alive for a long time.
Right. And it's sad.
It was because he was everyone in that movie. Yeah.
So we don't have an accent. I grew up accentless, which was tough. But what are you going to do? Moved to New York to go to school. And that is where I met the guys that ended up being in my comedy group, Derek, which is like Donald Glover, who people would know from Community.
Yep.
Dominic Durkis, Dan Ekman, Maggie McFadden. And then we sort of split off from this larger comedy group called Hammer Cats, which was like an NYU club. And there was a fun Hammer Cats related thing that happened over the weekend, which was that my girlfriend showed me that Kathleen Najimy had tweeted, because Dennis Quaid's kid is in that group now, is in my college sketch group that still continues to this day because he's at NYU. And Kathleen Najimy tweeted, man, loved so-and-so Quaid in Hammer Something Improv at NYU. And I just love that my old college sketch group is still out there having a Quaid in it and having its name mispronounced.
Everything should have a Quaid in it.
Put a Quaid in it.
Put a Quaid in it. Put a Quaid on it. Put a Quaid on it.
Hey, do you have
the last part of that sketch makes a lot more sense when Randy Quaid comes bumbling in and everyone's like, Jesus Christ!
Is he still at large or have they surrendered?
I don't know, actually. I just know that there was some sort of a fugitive scenario,
if the listeners were not up on this, you guys should definitely go on Wikipedia and read all about Randy Quaid's, like, paranoid road movie that he had, like, a year or two ago with his wife, and they were on the run. I think they fled to Canada.
They fucked up a hotel or something?
Yeah, they fucked up a ton of hotels, so they had this huge hotel bill that they were on the run from, and he was publishing, like, manifestos and stuff about how there were these people called the Star Killers, which was like a secret society that was hunting celebrities, and he alone was going to expose
them. Are we sure this isn't just a weird like social media promo for a new vacation movie?
No, we're not. But we're never sure of that, and we never can be. We have to be vigilant as a nation against viral marketing for new vacation movies.
Okay, here's this week's Quaid Report is brought to you by...
Quaid on the march!
Da, 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 da. Take that, Mr. Hitler! I don't know why they're always telling Mr. Hitler to take that.
Dennis is looking sharp.
Hello, Goofus and Gallant. Okay, legal history on his Wikipedia page. Brokeback Mountain lawsuit. On March 23rd, 2006, Quaid, who played Joe in Brokeback Mountain, filed the lawsuit against Focus Features, Del Mar Productions, blah, 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 alleging that they intentionally and negligently misrepresented Brokeback Mountain as a low-budget art house film with no prospect of making any money. In order to secure Quaid's professional acting services at below-market rates, the film grossed $160 million, sought $10 million in punitive damages. Quaid dropped the lawsuit. He decided to drop the lawsuit after Focus Features agreed to pay him a bonus. Focus Features denies making a settlement. Okay, so that was that legal thing. Alleged failure to pay hotel bill on September 24th, 2009.
Just got A&E in here.
Real life. Quaid and his wife were arrested in Texas for allegedly defrauding an innkeeper, burglary, and conspiracy in California.
Defrauding an innkeeper is such a renaissance crime.
You can defraud any other type of
not an innkeeper
person, but an innkeeper.
They got a pretty tight guild.
There are a lot of inns.
They'll send a mercenary after you.
There's an underground artery system that connects all of the inns in America.
Yeah, there's a lot of bootblacks down there.
That's right. The arrest stemmed from an earlier incident at which the Quaids had allegedly left a Santa Barbara, California hotel with a balance due of approximately $10,000. The two were released on bail later that evening. Evie Quaid provided a handwritten statement to the celebrity news site TMZ after the arrest, claiming the bill had been paid. A copy of a cashier's check for $5,546.96 dated September 22nd accompanied the note. They made arrangements, blah, 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 appear in court. All right, she got probation. They had to serve a bunch of community service. Yeah.
I swear I'm not exaggerating the part where they were in Canada and he was issuing missives about the Star Killers, though. That really happened.
Well, there's more. Alleged illegal occupancy. In September of 2010, they faced burglary charges for living in a guest house without permission of the owner.
Ooh, they were squatters.
Well, I think they just thought that Christmas Vacation was a documentary. And that they were just allowed to go do those things.
They were declaring Quaid's rights.
We don't know that Christmas Vacation wasn't a documentary.
I guess that's true.
Like, I feel like everybody probably pretty tight-lipped on the fact that they just filmed it.
Can you imagine Chevy and Randy Quaid in the same city block, alone the same movie?
I heard Stanley Kubrick faked Christmas Vacation.
The whole thing. Two years to shoot that movie.
Barry Lyndon.
200 takes per scene. In Christmas Vacation.
All lit by candlelight.
Everything. The squirrel, who was originally played by Bruno Kirby. May he rest in peace. Application for Canadian refugee status. They sought protection under the Canadian Immigration and Refugee Protection Act. Here we go. They've since applied for refugee status on the grounds that they fear for their lives in the United States, claiming that numerous actors have died under mysterious circumstances committed by the quote-unquote Hollywood star whackers.
I'm sorry, Star Whackers.
Star Whackers.
So much better.
They were granted bail on the conditions $10,000 bond pending further Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada hearings. However, due to their inability to deposit the required bond with the court for several days, they remained in custody of the Canadian Border Service agencies. They were released.
Between Canada freeing those hostages in Argo and taking the Quaids into their bosom.
Oh, here we go. As a result, if Quaid and his wife re-enter the United States, they will be arrested. In January 2013, Canadian immigration officials denied Randy Quaid's request for permanent resident status in Canada while still leaving open the option to challenge a decision in federal court. So, who knows?
Hashtag free Quaids.
Free Quaids.
So we're not going to get that SNL.
People think I'm trying to give away Quaaludes.
Open your mind, Mr. Quaid. Maybe he thought Kawato should be his attorney.
Maybe he was.
Maybe that would be a great show. Defending the Quaids.
And we could shoot it in Canada.
It'd be so much cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
To shoot it up there. But I don't know if he has a work visa. That's a weird... It's almost like his life is like the terminal. In a way where he's sort of trapped in this in-between. The Star Whackers. Do you think that was something he came up with just to try to get refugee status?
Or that's do you think a really he good question. It's, I don't know. It kind of doesn't it have a Randy Quaidness to it that you can kind of almost believe it in a weird way?
Now I want someone to investigate this secret society of Star Whackers. Star Whackers is a whole different website, it sounds like.
It sounds like the reverse of Mr. Skin. It's like where celebrities can find out where there are like normal people that are nude, just like regular people. Stars come here to jerk off to normal people.
That's the kind of like celebrity power I wish were real, that they could have that kind of internet just to find naked
their own celebrity website. If you go to anything.com.celebrity, that's the celebrity version of that website. You never have to buffer anything.
The entertainment industry, MySpace glitter animation.
The entertainment industry is not remotely organized enough to have
to get their
a
own
star whacking facility or an intranet of types with just
star whacking facility.
There's nothing like that. If you've even been on one production, it almost falls apart every time. There's no way that they could be assassinating
people.
Yeah,
that's why I don't believe a lot of conspiracy theories, because I feel like it's so hard to get anything together. It's hard to get a brunch together,
right?
Much less covering up like Roswell.
Or that a guy created the universe. Anyway, wait, what? What just happened?
Chris, that's messed up. I'm an Opus Dei. Okay. That is offensive to me.
Oh my God. Oh my God. The put out teenager Opus Dei. I am so not
Mom,
cool.
Mom, I'm Opus Dei now, okay? I can't go to the family reunion. I have to self-flagellate.
Mom, I don't need you flagellating me. I will do that myself. God. I mean, thank you, God.
Dad, I'm trying to hide evidence of Jesus's parentage. Leave me alone. Dad.
Son, I need you to take the trash out, please.
No. I haven't seen the Da Vinci Code, so I ran out of references.
Opus Dei, teenager. Too busy to take out the trash.
We can get that going.
Opus Dei teens.
Opus Dei teens. That could be on ABC Family.
Opus Dei babies. Opus Dei-bies. I'm going to make this work.
Opus Dei-bies, we make our dreams come true. Opus Dei-bies, we have weird views on the Jews.
That's where improv skills come in.
I don't even know that Opus Dei has weird views on the Jews. I'm sure they do.
It doesn't matter because it rhymes. And that's all I was trying to say before
rhymes
when you were rapping
truth.
Earlier. They
yeah.
are. If you can rhyme something, it makes it instantly
makes it true.
More true for me and you.
The killing fields that will be the comments on this episode.
Oh, yeah. This is...
Zane is rich and
this,
deep.
Right. This started it by basically being like, man, internet commenters are mean. And then I proceed to just essentially troll every potentially offended group in
this
the world.
This is going to turn into like a fucking Civil War reenactment battle scene.
Yeah, Chris, no big deal. Just here to promote my young adult book. If we could call down several potential lawsuits,
I like that
for defamation,
one
that would be
comments
great.
Like, oh, I can't wait to read that book.
Right. So, your book.
Oh, yeah. So,
the.
On that note,
Opus Dei, Walker.
Opus. Nice. He has all of their strengths and none of their
prayers and weaknesses. But you did write a book and
yes, I did.
And so, talk a little bit about.
Is it too late for Opus Dei in the time?
No, it's never too late for Opus Dei in the time. Kyle Clark, you win.
Oh, my desert love. Yeah.
Matt Jonas, stay in the UK, baby.
I think I want to pray to ya, pray to ya.
Ice cream Vatican's in the summertime.
Oh my God, you just referenced Ice Cream Castles.
Which is pretty much the greatest song of all time.
That is a great song.
It's a really good song.
That was, you know, those guys were all around, and I don't know if it's fair to necessarily credit him, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. There was that Prince aesthetic that happened
right.
all at that, you know, mm-hmm. that mid-80s time, Morris Day in the time, but they were so fucking good.
Yeah, it was almost like a weird, like, fantastical period of R&B, if that makes any sense. You had Prince wearing a lot of, like, weird purple stuff, riding around on motorcycles, weird guitars and things.
But
you had Morris Day in the time. It was like a weird...
And there was certainly an R&B element to it, but there was like a weird rock element
sure,
to
rock,
it as well.
Funk. It was the whole nexus of all that awesome stuff that sort of doesn't really exist
Morris
anymore.
Day in the time.
Yep.
Opus is Morris Day still time. Alive? He must
I think
be.
So.
I think so. I think they had a cameo in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah, they did.
I think the movie ends and they're at a Morris Day in the Time concert. So however you feel about Kevin Smith, you have to give him credit for like in like the year like 2000.
What do I have to do to convince Stephen Moffat to start a Doctor Who episode at a Morris Day in the Time concert?
I feel like that'd work pretty good. I just would
probably not much.
Is it Under the Cherry Moon or the one after that where Morris Day plays the like heavy thug guy in it?
He wasn't in Purple Rain?
No, he's in Purple Rain, but then like the movie Prince directed Under the Cherry
Moon.
I think it's
that. What about Rainbow Bridge?
That's what it is, where he plays like the thug gangster street
guy. Here's what I mean, Purple Rain, Under the Cherry Moon, Rainbow Bridge. If you told me these were all Led Zeppelin songs about Lord of the Rings, I would believe you.
Sure. I think it would just be like a doll collection, like Rainbow Bright.
Hi, guys.
Under the Cherry Moon.
Oh, that's adorable. The rain is purple.
But it's all these dirty albums about fucking.
My bridge is rainbow.
Actually, no, it does sound dirty. You're right. It does. It sounds super dirty.
It does sound a little bit dirty.
So, yeah.
So, fucking, you know, Rainbow Bridge could have been Prince's long overdue movie about Odin. And he totally missed an opportunity.
Prince knows Odin too well, and he didn't want to exploit their relationship that way. Wouldn't it not surprise you if Prince spent most of his time hanging out with, like, the Norse canon?
I would say...
Wouldn't it be that you go to the Norse world and they're all dressed like Prince people?
Makes tons
and
of sense.
And this is
one of them.
The
same way that we got Diana Prince from the Amazons, we would get Prince...
It.
Oh, weird. Prince. Oh, my God, you guys. He's male.
Wide open,
he's
Chris
male
Hardwick.
Wonder Woman.
Wide open.
We have created
I don't know why they wouldn't call him Wonder
theory.
Man. He's just male Wonder Woman.
Because calling him Wonder Man would be heteronormative. Or not heteronormative. It would be something.
Well,
calling
would
him male
lawsuit.
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Man was also on the Smigel did. That was on TV Funhouse.
Oh, yeah?
The Comedy Central. Look it up on YouTube. It's fucking hilarious. Yeah. It's basically this. It looks like the old Fleischer Superman cartoons.
Sure.
And it's Wonder Man, you know, fighting rights where they're wrong. And also to get his alter ego laid. And so this guy basically, Wonder Man and his alter ego meets that woman.
Sure.
You're
yeah.
Oh, are you seeing anyone? Right. Why do you ask? Oh, just making conversation. And she gives the boyfriend's name. And he flies into the guy's apartment. He's like, is your name Jake Nelson? It sure is. And then he fucking throws the guy into space and sends the girl a telegram. Had to leave for Europe. Never coming back. Stop. And the last shot is him. Anyway, Wonder Man is hilarious.
Yeah. You would still have to do a little bit of legwork if you were a superhero. You couldn't just go around disappearing people. You would have to send a telegram.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Bringing it all back around to telegrams.
Telegrams and telegraphs. And... So is your book about the telegraph industry?
No, not at all. It's a young adult comic fantasy adventure.
I do love the
which
plot
is weird
to your book, by
because,
the way.
What's that?
I do love the plot. Like,
thank you very much.
The byline to it.
Oh,
hilarious.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the book is called Crap Kingdom, and it is a comedic fantasy adventure about a kid, teenage boy who loves like Harry Potter. He loves Chronicles of Narnia. He loves anything where there's like a kid that finds out that he's the chosen one in like a magical fantasy realm. And then that actually happens to him. He becomes the chosen one in a magical fantasy realm. But then it turns out that the magical fantasy realm that he is the chosen one in is really, really crappy.
So it's not.
No, you get there through like a Goodwill donation box and like a Kmart parking lot. And it's mostly just made of like trash from Earth. And he's just like, I don't think I want to do this. This actually, I don't think I want this. So he like turns down his destiny. And then he's like, wait, that was my destiny. What am I doing? I got to go back. So he goes back and they're like, hey, we already have a new chosen one. Meet our chosen one. It's your best friend. And he's like, shit, man. Except he doesn't say shit, man, because it's a
young adult book.
Yeah, exactly. Although I've been told in no uncertain terms by many fans of the young adult genre that you can swear in young adult books. I had no idea when I was writing one. I was trying very hard not to just like lace it with profanity. But,
well, I think you can say like shit and stuff, but I can't.
Yeah, it's like a PG-13.
Yeah, I don't think.
I don't think
you can be like, I want to get all up in that pussy in this
right,
young adult fantasy.
No vaginal insertion.
For reasons that aren't worth going into right now, I saw Jack the Giant Slayer this weekend, and I'm pretty sure at the end one of the giants says fuck, which seems weird.
Really?
You get one PG-13.
You get one. I think it's a PG-13 movie, yeah. And I guess they were just like, well, if we get one, we better have. So like at the end, one of the giants has a like a second head, and the second head is like mentally challenged in a way that they never really exploit for laughs, because I feel like they were like, well, that would be weird, but they also don't do anything else with, so it's just there, and it's disturbing. And then, yeah, at the end, I mean, I guess spoiler alert, but I don't think anyone cares. It just goes, the head giant's about to explode, and its second mentally challenged head just goes, fuck! And it's so weird.
I like that,
although I would
spoiler
love it if that
alert,
could become a
the
meme.
Giant gets slayed, possibly by Jack.
Oh, man.
I thought it was an ironic title.
It means he's a really good comedian and he slays the giants with comedy.
Yeah, so spoiler alert, Star Wars, there's some wars among the stars.
Son of
shit,
a
man!
Can we talk for a second
sure.
about... I moderated the Walking Dead panel at Paley Fest the other night, and they're talking, and it comes up something that happened earlier on in the season, like a really big thing that happened, and someone in the audience was like, oh, spoiler! And I was like, you're in a Walking Dead panel!
Right.
People have gone fucking mental with the spoiler bullshit.
Right, yeah.
It's so over. It's so... Just fucking get over it.
I just want to be in church and be like, on the third day, Jesus rose...
Spoiler!
I'm not finished with the Bible yet.
I'm the Opus Dei walker. I know. God.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, yeah, if you're at... You would assume that that would be the epicenter of, like, Walking Dead fandom, so everyone would be at the very least current with the
show. Caught up.
And it wasn't, and you're saying it wasn't even like something from like right, like the night before. It was from
four or five months ago.
Right. Yeah, that should be, what are they supposed to talk about if not the things that happened on the show?
I am tired of people, listen, if you're too busy, that's fine. If you work too much and you don't have time to watch things, that's fine. But please stop expecting the rest of the world to conform to your habits.
I like that they still bought a ticket and went to this event.
Yes.
Going like, well, I hope they don't ruin it for everyone by talking about the show we all came for.
They're only going to talk about season one, right? From two seasons ago?
Those six episodes that ran several years ago? Like, that's
or
right,
no, you
right?
know what they should do? They should do several panels, one each for people that are at different stages of the show.
I just want one panel, separate but equal panels.
Now, that show might get behind.
Wait a minute.
It's a different accent every time. It's a different accent.
Spoiler alert.
No, I've joined the movement. This is a new guy.
He's aware that there's a...
With yeah. the internet, you can't assume that people don't know things, except spoilers. Goddamn spoilers.
So Crap Kingdom's out.
Yeah, Crap Kingdom, well, when is this air?
When does your book come out?
My book comes out on Thursday.
Comes out on Thursday?
Yes. Is it
okay,
go
so it'll come out after Thursday.
It'll come out after Thursday?
Yes, the book will be available.
Okay, great. Because all things being equal, if it would come out before Thursday, I'm trying to get people to pre-order it, so that would be fine, too. I don't know if that...
That's impossible.
Okay,
Because this week...
Then I love it.
This is one of those weeks where every...
Spoiler alert.
Every episode had someone who was like, I can do the podcast, but it has to go up this week.
Right.
Like, okay.
Oh, that's fine. I just wanted to know.
Took your so I apologize. Sweet time getting our podcast I do to promote know, this show.
I do know that... Kyle. You're talking too much.
Sorry.
I can just shut him down. Oh, he did. He sort of backed away from the mic a little bit. Oh, little buddy.
You're being so funny.
I'm sorry you talk
Focus
too much.
On promoting.
No. But it was just happened to be one of those weeks. But I also do know that it's so that first week a book is out is so important.
Right.
Because they say the publisher basically that's kind of how they treat you based on how that first week, like, you know, people buy books after the first week too.
Right. Well, yeah, it's like the dilemma of putting anything out in the world now is kind of exactly what you're talking about with the like the Walking Dead, where it's like, there's that dude being like, oh, I haven't seen the whole thing yet. I've been pretty busy. What, writing my Walking Dead blog or whatever he's doing.
I'll tell you what, if there's any way that I can get this out before Thursday, I will do that because I do know how important it is, but I'll have to check if I can shift some people around if they're cool with that.
I'm trying to think then because there's like a pre-order offer that I'm doing. So I'm trying to think if I should talk about that in case of you release it before Thursday or not.
Well, let's solve it this way.
Okay.
Let's solve it this way. If you're listening to this podcast before March 7th,
Thursday, March 7th,
that this wonderful pre-order offer.
Yes.
Which is
the following. If you go to crapkingdom.com and you pre-order the book and you follow the simple instructions therein, I will write your name into a custom rap song. I will then perform on YouTube. I've already done it for 200 people. And they are very excited about
Jesus Christ,
it.
Dude!
Yeah. I do like 50 names per rap song. It's really fun. I put it up on YouTube. I email you when it goes up. You can share it with your friends, and you can be immortalized forever in the hallowed halls of rap
history. I think it'd be funny if you had said, don't share it with your friends.
Don't share it with your friends. Keep it to yourself. I share very personal secrets about myself.
This is just your...
I tell everyone what my real sexuality is, and hint, it isn't the three normal ones.
YouTube means it's just for you.
YouTube means it's just for you. Why would you share my Gangnam Style video that I made for you? That's Psy being mad at like 1%. I made that Harlem Shake video for you. Why would you share it with other people? It's called YouTube, not everyone tube, Daniel.
It's not... God! Just trying to fucking suffer for the Lord.
I feel I like pretty bummed that the Harlem Shake is a thing now because there was a while where I was pretty cool because I had met Psy, but that's not cool anymore. That's gone by the wayside.
It you actually know? Now you're automatically not cool.
I know, right? So I can't tell anyone that I've met.
It's so hard, you know. Like it's not his fault that the thing became a billion view video.
No.
And then, people just, it gets so popular that people just can't take it anymore.
Well, but I think also it's fine for, I think that Psy is like the perfect storm of that kind of thing, that he will probably have the perfect stick the perfect landing with it. 'Cause he was already a huge star in, Korea?
Yeah.
Great.
Already hated America. I'm bringing up that controversy. Yeah.
And so I think that the sense that I got is he was just like, hey, I'm randomly famous in America, sweet, and when I go back home, I'll just be considered a hero, and I have all this extra money from when I was popular for 6 months.
Yes. They did a follow-up song to Gangnam Style that was from a girl's point of view. It was the female, like, basically Korean Jersey Shore.
Okay.
Which obviously got a fuck ton of views as well.
Right.
Not as funny.
Mm.
Because the video was really just in a studio.
Less horsey dancing?
Less horsey dancing. Yeah. It's got to be about the horsey dancing.
It really does. You got to have it some sort of dance craze.
So, you know, as a performer.
Sure.
As a performer, do you, that's an interesting topic. I don't think most performers think of success as having a ceiling. Like, well, I don't want to get too, you know. Do you not care about any of that, or do you feel like, oh, fuck, I would love to have a video that had a billion views?
Well, it's funny that we started out talking about, like, random people being mean to you on the internet, right? Because I am in this sort of, I guess it's like a weird privileged, like, pocket where a lot of people know about me, but it's not a ton of people, but it's a lot. But all of the people that know about me, for the most part, like me and mm-hmm. like what I do. Like, that's why they know about me, is because they like what I do. Whereas I feel like when you achieve, like, I guess what I consider in my head to be a more real level of fame, you're then exposed to tons and tons and tons of people, some of which will like you and a lot of which will just be like, no, not that. And like, I like clicked on one of like Lena Dunham's tweets today. It's just a totally normal, innocuous thing. And just the torrent of internet hatred that was being thrown her way was just like pure, just like snark for no reason and for nothing, was just really crazy to me. And so I am trying really hard to make this book a success. I feel like you get very few opportunities in your career to sort of like muster all of the things that you've done and put them towards one purpose, which for me is getting people to buy and enjoy this book. And I hope it sort of takes me to whatever that next level is. But I am trying to also enjoy this current place that I'm in, where it's like not that many people know about me, but the people that know about me, for the most part, they like me.
Well, whenever you start anything new, it's sort of like you're shaking the tree. Like when Talking Dead started,
right?
It was, you know, a bunch of really nice things and then a bunch of really fuck you, you're the worst person in the world. And then the longer you do it, the people who hate you just sort of fall off the tree.
Right.
And so then it's a little less frequent. The same thing happened with Web Soup, or when I started at G4, you know. Well, even singled out, because there was we had the internet then,
right?
And so it was, you know, over time, it's when you start a new thing,
right?
And I think, you know, Girls is a show that is now just kind of exploded into the pop cultural consciousness, and so, you know, if that show's on for three more seasons, by that time, I think a lot of that shit will have shaken loose, because those people will just start going and hating on something else.
And I think it is a larger scale version of what I was describing earlier, of people going like, don't try to make me like that, because if I liked it, I would already like it.
And I don't also, I guess maybe it's good that I don't have this point of view, but, you know, someone said to me like, no, that just means you're more successful because there's more of there's more hatred.
That,
and I'm like,
that is the hip hop point of view
really
on the subject.
Yeah. To internalize it that way.
Right. I feel like you see a lot of tweets from rappers. It's like, man, the more haters, if you don't have haters, that just means you're not doing anything right, or something like that, or you're not big enough or whatever. And it's like, I guess that makes sense, but, you know, that's probably easier to feel like when you're in a hot tub in Monaco than when you're in front of your computer in LA at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday, just trying to make it happen, trying to put a lot of free comedy and things out there for people to enjoy. And there's a guy that's like, no thanks. I don't like free funny things.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Because you sort of came right at sort of the start of YouTube. Like, Derek was one of those first things that really
totally
took from that. Have you watched the evolution of like how people consume YouTube change since you've started?
Oh, for sure. Well, sort of the name of our group was Derek Comedy. And the reason it was that is because that was when I went and signed us up for YouTube, which I had just found out about because Lazy Sunday, that SNL video, had gotten really big on YouTube.
What year was this? Oh, six?
This would have been like 2005.
Okay.
I When I went and put in our username, the reason I made it Derek Comedy, because the name of our group was already Derek, was because I wanted to make sure that people knew that it was comedy. It was almost this weird thing of like, almost like the Old West or something like that, or like when there were first like movies and there was like a great train robbery thing with like a train coming at the screen and people would jump out of the way. Like, I think YouTube at that point, people didn't know exactly what it was, and the only real architect of internet videos was the eternal dudes falling off of things or kittens falling
just
asleep.
Just calling something Derek also has incredibly poor search engine optimization.
It really does. Which is why it was funny, like when we first started the group, we had this lawyer and she was like, you guys will regret calling it Derek within 6 months, and we were like, okay, and then we did within 6 months, because the whole reason that we named it that was because all of our names of everyone in the group, with the exception of Maggie, our producer, were D names, and so we're like, we'll call it Derek. That's another D name, and then that just made it incredibly, first of all, confusing, because people were like, which one of you guys is Derek? And then a little bit race baiting, because they would mostly, if they didn't ask who was Derek, they would just assume that Donald was Derek, because I guess they felt like Derek was like a black name or something like that.
Really?
Like, dude, Derek, and your comedy guys, sweet. Absolutely, all the time. I think it's the same thing as like Hootie.
Sure.
Like, if there's a name in the thing, just assume it's the black guy.
Yeah. Poor Darius Rucker, another D name.
You're right. Holy shit.
Oh
my God. Is Donald Darius Rucker? I need to call him after this. This is going to be, this is a really disturbing revelation that we're making right now.
Well, you know, because you know, with Childish Gambino, that allows him to explore more hip hop themes.
Right.
And he, when Donald plays the character of Darius Rucker, he can explore more country themes.
He can explore really wanting to be with you.
I wrote for this.
And holding your hand.
I wrote for this country music award show several years ago. And the network that we were doing it for is like a country music network. And they would persistently, all of the people that I was working for, this production company in LA, would be like, can we get a little more diversity in here? This show's a little white. I mean, I know it's a country music show, but can we get up? Well, then they would be like, we can call Darius. We got Darius. Darius, we'll get him. We got Darius.
Is Charlie
Pride
still
alive?
Their
answer for everything was
they're
like,
diversifying is one guy.
Yo, we can put Toby Keith in blackface. What you need?
I mean, come on.
what are we talking here?
My name of my new speed metal band.
Toby Keith in blackface? But yeah, I mean, it has been definitely different. I think back in there used to be less stuff on YouTube, so you would get more people just wandering across something and being like, fake. Which we used to get a lot. Like, we would get people that would watch our videos, which are comedy, filmed comedy pieces, and I think very well filmed, especially for the time, and their response would literally be like, this is fake. And it's like, yeah, it's fake.
Totally shooting coverage, man.
It's a fictional thing. Like, there was one that we had that was featured on YouTube, so that obviously brought in a lot of, like, of people that wouldn't watch our stuff normally. And it took place in a convenience store, but it was very clearly, like, shot and edited. And it wasn't like it was from a security camera point of view or anything like that. And the first comment was like, fake. And it's like, it's a fictional
but that
thing.
Might
You're
have
not
been,
pulling one over.
That might have been a troll, like someone,
sure,
you know,
maybe
like people who troll by pretending to be stupid trolls,
sure,
just because they want to stir up.
That
it's
could
like,
be.
It's like photoshopped. Like, all right, Pixar didn't happen,
right? Which is true.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
Yeah, that nothing before photography happened. The first day of the world was the first day that photos happened.
I mean, that was basically the founding principle of the simulation in The Matrix was Pixar, it didn't happen. Everything had to be simulated and recorded.
Right.
That was just, that was the machines saying Pixar, it didn't happen.
Whoa.
What the fuck?
You screwed me up, man.
Sorry, bro.
I sincerely am trying to figure that out, and I don't, it's too much for me.
I don't think it makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that concept that I just said makes a lick of sense.
I was really trying.
It's just, I started talking and I was like,
I would
like,
love it if
I'm
there was an alternate take
thought
of that scene in the first Matrix with Joe Pantoliano in the restaurant where he's talking about why he's like betraying, spoiler alert, Trinity and Neo and the gang. And there's one, so there's the version we know, right? And there's another one where he's like, I don't know. Pixar, it didn't happen.
Yes,
Pixar. I had a tweet a couple weeks ago about Pixar, it didn't happen, which was a 13-year-old founding an animation company. Pixar, it didn't happen. I was pretty proud of myself.
But then it did happen. So, Derek, you guys, YouTube, you're one of the early YouTube success stories.
Yeah, I mean, we started getting a following because we had this one video called Bro Rape that got a lot of attention. And then after that, people were sort of waiting for us to put out new stuff. And to toot our own horn, I think we never really tried to be a YouTube group, if that makes any sense. Like, there were a lot of people who made their living off of YouTube, which was pretty cool that you could do that after a while. But they would do a lot of stuff like, oh, we're going to collaborate with other YouTube sensations. So it's like, hey, now we have this guy that plays keyboards in his bedroom.
I'm familiar with this. I'm familiar with this structure. I understand.
Are you, Chris? What is that?
YouTube.com/Nerdist.
Which, don't get me wrong, and that's definitely something that if I were to sit down today and go, okay, I want to make a living off of YouTube, that's absolutely something I would do because it's a great way to cross-promote things. But we kind of were like, we just want these to be videos that exist. And if they have to exist on YouTube and that's the best way to get them seen, then great. But we're not investing a lot of time in trying to be like literally like viral sensations. So we didn't ever make like a Sarah Palin video. Or, mm-hmm. you know, we wouldn't have made a Gangnam Style parody.
Sarah Palin. Here we go, okay?
Guys, he's got something. Everyone, shh. Okay. Everybody's got something.
It's Sarah Palin and her husband as Mario and Luigi. Come on, guys.
What's weird that just
shut
got
down the internet.
700,000
shut down the internet. Yeah, just you saying that. Somebody without realizing it tried to like their headphones. They tried to star Twitter fave their own headphones when you said that without even realizing it. Does that happen to you guys? I spend a lot of time on Twitter and I find myself trying to fave emails. Like if my girlfriend sends me something, it's like, hey, we're gonna have jambalaya tonight. I'm like, oh, pretty sweet. I try to fave it and it doesn't work.
I like to passive aggressively fave or like stuff so I don't have to actually respond. And when I get like emails about something I have to be at and I want to like fave my email and I'm like, oh, I have to respond to this, god damn it.
Right. I do love that kind of fave that's like, yep, okay, great. Mm-hmm. All right, cool, great,
good fave. Awesome. I've seen
good fave, bro. Good, nice fave, bro. So so we didn't do any of that stuff. So I'm pretty happy with the kind our sort of like little body of like 30-35 sketches.
There's
that
some
we ended
great
up making over like a 3-4 year period. And then, so instead of like paying ourselves, we ended up self-financing a movie that we wrote, with the combination of like money that we'd made doing YouTube stuff and like some like family and friends, dough, that we're very slowly paying back. And we ended up, making this movie Mystery Team that we shot in New Hampshire, all five of us wrote the story of, and then myself, Donald, and Dominic star in and wrote. And it went to Sundance in 2009, and then it ended up getting distributed after Sundance. And then we all moved out here to try to like work on the release of it. And we did this weird thing when the movie came out where we, it was one of those things that like seems like an awesome idea at the time and had some definite flaws in it. But like, instead of going to immediately to like LA or New York or Chicago or wherever, like there's a lot of people, we went to these like little college towns and we actually opened the movie in like AMC 25, like multiplexes in like college towns. Mm-hmm. And because it was, I hate to blame it on it because it was before Twitter. It would have been easier if Twitter was more of a thing, or at least that we were aware of at the time. But we would just get these like 3-person crowds in like Iowa City, Iowa. And we'd be like, we're here to do the Q&A. We're here with the movie and everything. And then like afterwards, kids would come up to us and be like, instead of being like, hey, you're here, they'd be like, why are you here? Like, concerned for us. And we're like, but aren't you happy that we're here? Like, a little bit, but we're more concerned because nothing ever happens here.
Well, but I think, yeah, it's there's such a difference between people who will just randomly consume something that they've seen on the internet that someone passed to them, and then something that you can actually somehow let them know about to then get out of their houses and go and park.
My friend Todd is this guy who like founded this company where he like tours with independent films because he's an independent filmmaker. He made a movie and wanted to get it seen, and the best way he could think of to do that was actually tour around colleges with it. And he said this thing that I always remember about when we were about to go on tour. He was like, when you go to these college towns, your main competition is not like, oh, the football game or another movie. Your main competition is people staying in their dorms and eating donuts mm-hmm. and getting high. And that's so true. Like, I'm sure you've experienced that in the many things that you do. Like,
oh my God. Furman and I used to have that all the time. We'd go to these college towns and you get up at 4 a.m. and you fly to a hub city and take a smaller plane and drive 100 miles and you show up and then you know, you're basically just performing for the security folks. Right. There are like eight people in the dorm, and it's right. like they didn't like.
Oh. And like even the kid that's driving in from the airport's like, oh yeah, I'm not gonna be able to make it to the show. Cause, yeah, I got to get up with my frat brothers tomorrow and build a house for blind kids. But I'm probably not gonna go to that either. But that's what I'm saying I'm doing.
I mean, I don't. It was super fun because we, you know, like we are with your friend and you get, yeah. you know, you get paid anyway, and it was yeah. super fun. And it's a good experience. But yeah, but motivating college kids when they are motivating anyone is tough. But college kids in particular, their attention is so demanded by so many different things.
Right.
And most of the time, they just don't feel like doing it.
It's like, I could maybe go to your thing, and I really like you guys, and I really want to come see you, but there's a party where I might get to make out with Shelly.
Yeah.
Shelly says that if I go there, I might get to make out with her, because she may break up with, you know, Darren.
But what you need to do is hire Shelly to come to...
That's a great idea. So what you're saying is we need to optimize a loose-moraled girl in every college town.
Or a guy.
And have her show up at your
event. Like, just basically get a guy and a girl and make it a makeout party.
Okay.
But you have to find the...
The center. It's kind of a Malcolm Gladwell thing.
Yes.
Like, there's certain people that are, like, you know, influencers.
You need to find
They're
the influencers.
Mavericks. You need to find the maverick, the makeout mavericks of
yes.
that college
you
town.
Need the, yes, you need the... you need the makeout mavens and the makeout...
The makeout mavens.
The makeout, salesman.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And makeout and mavericks is my other band I'm starting.
Oh, my god.
That's more like an indie pop, like, yeah. twee kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
thing.
You know,
makeout
just
mavericks.
Like the aggressions and the speed metal. This is more, like, for my art.
No, actually, the makeout mavericks are my romantics cover band. I'm sorry, that's a Paul and Storm. Bit that's never not fun to do.
But yeah, so like we ended up doing this thing in this one town. We were halfway through the tour. It wasn't going very well. And I was like, we were at Walmart because that's the only store in most towns, so people shouldn't yell at me. And I just saw these like foam swords, and I was like, that's it, man. Swords. And we ended up doing this thing where if people came to see the movie, if they came back the next night, we would give them a foam sword, hand numbered with an inspirational quote written on it. And then we would take their name and email address and we would put it on the DVD. And then Columbia, Missouri, it actually turned around. Like we started actually getting crowds because people would come back and like bring friends and stuff like that because it made it more of an event than just coming to see the movie. And I sort of took away from that just something about like not like giving you want people to consume things on their own terms, right, and consume the things that you make because they're good and you like them. But like sometimes now, especially when people's attention is being so competed for, if you can attach an additional narrative to it, i.e. I'll put your name in a custom rap song, people are like, oh, okay, that'll actually, because otherwise, and I find myself doing this too, you go like, oh, I do want to go to that concert, but it's 2 months from now, whatever, I'll like think about it later, and you totally forget, and then it comes and goes. But if you have an incentive for them to do something about it right then and there, it adds that extra layer of like, oh, I actually am going to buy that or go to that thing or whatever, which in if you have no money to promote things, which I typically don't, and if you have, you know, like, if you're competing with all of those, everything else, which everything is nowadays, it like it helps. So I've been doing tons of crazy stuff. I put up a half hour of stand-up on YouTube on Sunday when 100 more people pre-ordered my book. That's like my like half hour that I've been working on for like a couple years.
Oh, you just put
it
on YouTube?
I was just like, I was kind of like, fuck it. Because A, it'll motivate me to write more things and do bits that I'm not tired of anymore. But also, I was just like, well, you know, I went out for Comedy Central, you know, whatever. I went out for this. I went out for that. Nothing ever panned out with it. And I was like, I could keep working on that half hour, or I could just tape it and put it out there to try to get people to buy my book, which is the thing that I care about more than all of that stuff.
How did it go?
Great. The half hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. I mean, more people bought the book, and then I put it out, and people seem to like it. And then it's also the kind of thing where I'm not tired of people asking this. I understand why they ask it, but like I do all of these different things, and I go on podcasts, and I talk about them. But for the most part, people can't see them because I do them in LA or I do them in New York, and like most people don't live in LA or New York. So I'm happy to have something there where people are like, I know, it's weird.
Where do they live?
Waterworld?
I guess there must be some sort of people. Oh, yes. They must live in the Grand Lake between... We know there's a Phoenix.
Yes.
And then there's
an island. Right, which I thought was just like a big boat. Mm-hmm. But so no, I'm happy to have something online that people can go, oh, that's you doing something by yourself that is funny, that is outside of Derek.
Well, you know, I've always said this about podcasts too, that a comedian's... Part of a comedian's job, I think, is to figure out how to get your voice into the world as much as possible so people can decide if they're going to come see you live or if they want to get on board with what you're doing.
I think so. And I think that, like, none of the things that I do is, they're all different, but they're all, like, if you like one of them, like, if you like my, go watch my stand-up and you like it, you're going to like this book I just wrote. And if you like this book I just wrote, you're going to like my first book, probably. They all seem to fit into a pretty, you know, sort of large Venn diagram of nerdy things that people enjoy. I put out a rap mixtape of like 9 songs that I've recorded like a year ago. I've put out tons of stuff. So hopefully it gets out there and people want to actually like go over the hump and actually like purchase the book.
Where's really the
like
best that. Place for people to
crapkingdom.com, crapkingdom.com. And it has like pre-ordering instructions. And if you are listening to this before Thursday, March 7th, and you go pre-order it, I will write your name into a custom rap song. If it's after March 7th, I would still love it if you would buy the book. It's also available for Kindle, for iPad. There's an audiobook of it, but I'm not sure when that comes out. So if you like audiobooks, check for that on Audible.
So what do you, are you wanting to turn this into a series, or do you think you want to expand it into?
It would be cool too. I think that it, which
movie?
That would be great. I would love that. I would like to make it into a series if it seems like people like it enough for my publisher to want to do that. That would be pretty neat. And also there's just something about the idea of writing a fantasy saga that is super duper appealing to me right now. Maybe if I actually get to do it in a few years, I'm like, oh God, now I got to pay off that thing that I set up that I don't know what the answer to it is. I'm starting to have so much more sympathy for Damon Lindelof. But as of right now, that's something I would absolutely love to do. If people buy the book and like it, that would be a blast.
Turn it into.
Do I sound like it's such a craven self-promoter?
Not at all. Not at all.
No, it's, you know, listen, man, if you kind of have to be, like, if, because, you know, you can't rely on other people to tell people about your stuff. You kind of have to tell them, like, this is what I do. And it's not like. You're not doing it for douchey reasons. You're doing it because you care about your work and you want to be able to do more of that work. And that's the kind of the
I
way
so.
That
and
you
I,
do
I think
that.
That's what I try to communicate along with the self-promotion is a feeling like if you buy this thing, then I get paid for it and then I can live and I can do more of it instead of writing for country music television shows.
I think it's also, you're one of those people who does do so many different things that, like, I feel like with something like this, you're like, by the way, like, you know me for this and this, but, like, also I write books that they can be like, oh, okay. Like, that's.
It is something where it's like, I do all those things
that awareness.
Hopes that you'll find out. I like all doing all those things. I love doing all those things and I do them for their own reasons, but it is what you said where it's like, if you find out about me for doing a podcast or for doing stand up or whatever, and then you go, like, oh, he's got a book. I'll check it out. A lot of people have done that. A lot of people found out about me through Derek and then bought my first book and enjoyed it. But it's funny, I just remembered an interaction that you and I had one time, Kyle, at the Nerd Melt Theater, where I think we were like in the meltdown in the comic book store, and I was there to do some show or something like that. And you're like, oh, hey man, what's up? You here to hang out? And I was just, without thinking about it, I just went, Kyle, when was the last time you saw me hang out?
That is true.
It is the very little hanging. It's a lot of,
but
like,
sometimes there's the after things. Does
right,
that count?
For sure.
Where it's late enough at night that you
can't go
to
do
another
something
gig.
Else.
That's my favorite gig.
Better
to
have
do
a drink
with you,
a
by
pizza.
The way, are the ones that are like at midnight. Because I'm like, oh, I might get to hang with DC after this
right.
show.
Well, Kyle is so nice and so sweet and accommodating.
Yes.
That sometimes you can't help but just want to attack him.
I know. What is that? That's terrible.
Oh, don't
it's
you
terrible
start
about
DC
the
on that?
People.
He's one of the handful of people in LA who's nice to me.
What? There are more people that are nice to you?
No, there's plenty.
You're a lovely man. You're hilarious.
It's a running caricature of
Kyle
me we have on the show.
Kyle does a pizza shop show that I did in, what was that? Where was that?
Out in Simi Valley.
Simi Valley.
From.
That was fun.
That was a fun
Kyle's,
show.
Kyle's adorable. People got to check out Kyle.
Well, I was going to say, by the way, with Nerd Turns, I just remember us writing like 1,000 versions of the stuff. And then you came in and improv through and everything. Right. Oh, that's way funnier what he just came up with than the 2 hours of writing we just did.
Well, it was funny to begin with, but you also gave me an easy job of like, be a pretentious artist dick, which is like the most fun character
Absolutely.
To play of just somebody that's really into themselves and their own vision and also being mean to a girl, which is
that,
a funny thing to do because it's a mean
thing
to do.
On you on the couch, like, and just keep coming in and saying awful things to Jenny. And I think we rolled for a half an hour after we already had the shot just because it was fun to keep doing that setup.
It's like if you've been around enough people that are like, oh, I'm a nerd. I really... But it's like secretly you're just a mean artist dick. And you're... And you think you're sensitive, but you're really just mean to women. Like, that's why Scott Pilgrim is such a great movie, because I feel like it gives the lie to the idea of, like, the really, like, sensitive artist dude that's just, like, whatever. Like, at the end of that movie, you realize, like, oh, no, you've been a dick this whole time. There were, like, all these women that were like, I love you. And you're like, what? I gotta go. And then it's great. I love it because I've been that dude. And so I think it's time to start deconstructing the myth of, like, the... sensitive artist dude.
It's why I became obsessed with Girls, was that first scene where she's with that guy and he's like, don't be anybody's slave.
Right, but he's clearly having his entire existence financed.
Yeah, just giant tool.
Also, I love it. And that I fell in love with that show in that same scene where she says to him, like, oh, how's that play going? And his only response is, those guys are dicks. And then they just move on. I was like, this is great. This is great.
So Crab Kingdom.
Crab Kingdom, yep.
Pre-order
in stores on March 7th. Yep, pre-order or it is in stores now.
Twitter, DC Pearson?
Twitter.com/DC Pearson. It's a lot of puns, especially if you like puns about like 90s R&B combined with like J.R.R. Tolkien specifics.
Well, there was no movies or music before the 90s was any good. Not
it
one.
It made me so upset. But also, too, it's like that is my sort of... nostalgia G-spot is like late 90s, early 2000s. So if you like, I don't know,
you've never
like
seen an all
OMC's
that
How
joke
Bizarre
you
reference combined with like something about Game of Thrones, twitter.com/DC Pearson. It's a lot of stuff like that. And then, yeah, I'm also on Tumblr at DC Pearson and or dcpearson.tumblr.com and Facebook, DC Pearson.
Do you reference what was the name of the group from How Bizarre? It was the
OMC.
OMC, yes.
Something Millionaires Club.
That, yeah, because they were all like Aboriginal,
yeah.
I think, and they were, that should have been the name of their first album, Aboriginal.
And it's just their abs.
But that guy from OMC with the great voice has passed away a few years ago.
What, he was?
Yeah, but I will say in sort in memoriam, that is a great karaoke song. Yeah, honor him by doing that at karaoke. It's mostly talk singing, which I love because I can't sing.
Tyrion Lannister's the Hand of the King. Game of Thrones. Yeah, how
cruising
bizarre.
Cruising down the King's Road in the hot, hot sun.
That would be fucking awesome.
I will do that. You know, like how I spend this entire time running down like the idea of doing something like super topical, and then I can't wait to go do an OMC How Bizarre Game of Thrones
Game
parody.
Of Thrones. Well, it's a good time. It's coming back on.
Please be the Hand of the King.
How bizarre.
Sister Lannister says, fuck me.
How bizarre. How incestuous.
Bing, bing, bing.
Oh, man.
Bing,
bing, that would be great.
All right.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris Hardwick.
Yes, thank you. Good to see you, DC Pearson. And everyone else, enjoy your burrito. Do not go to sepbutteek.org. Please.
Don't start it either.
Yes, I've not expanded Nerdist to include white power nerds.
Nope.
Not okay.
Not part of the deal.
I'm just a nerd for racism.
Yeah, you know? A big tent, but it's not that big of a tent.
Yeah, it's not. There's still, we are SEP of the racists.
You're racist against racists.
Yes, just like Dexter hunts serial killers.
Can we pitch that to Showtime? Like a Dexter for racists? He's only racist against racists.
To other races. Hey, you cracker-eating, toast-liking motherfucker.
We'll work it out.
Okay, good. We'll work it out.
To draft.
Okay, please, right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.